Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Matt Report in between seasons 4 and 5. So, of course, many of you have been following along. You can get season 4 at mattreport.com/season 4. That's the entire 10 episodes of that season. It was a great season. And I'm really looking forward to season 5. I've sort of been teasing it a little bit. It's got an interesting twist halfway through. We're going to shake things up. But that's not going to be revealed until we're in that season. But while we wait for season 5, one of my good friends, one of my colleagues, friend, somebody I look up to in the WordPress space, I almost consider him a mentor, a few degrees away. I just sort of look at the stuff that he's doing and sort of say, boy, I would really like to do it that way too. Jake Goldman. Jake, welcome back to the program, sir.
It's great to be here. Be careful, you're going to give me a big head before we get into questions.
Don't worry. We're going to talk about agency life, so then we're going to really deflate both of our egos.
Bring me down.
So, Jake, for folks who don't know who you are in the WordPress space, who are you and what do you do?
You don't know who I am? After that intro, so I'm the president and founder of 10Up, and we're predominantly a full service agency that focuses on making a better web for people creating content on the web, with a sprinkling of products that also and tools, open source and pay, that further that vision of helping content creators. And started 10Up about 6 years ago, and now we're one of the larger, you would call it, agencies that are focused on WordPress as a platform in the community that are out there today.
We may have chatted about this stuff before, but if we did, it was a few years ago. I guess I should have done my homework and looked at your last episode that you're on here, but I think it's probably been 2 years since you've been on the airwaves here. You know, I've seen a lot of WordPress freelancers come and go, and they sort of started their business and they tried to make a go at it doing the small business website. You know, and for whatever reason, they just couldn't make a go at it. I've seen a lot of boutique agencies, like myself included, sort of maybe plateau is not the word, but sort of just stay the steady course over the last few years in the WordPress space. Mm-hmm. If you are somebody who might be in that boutique position right now, you got a couple people that work for you, maybe a handful of freelancers off to the side. Are there any words of encouragement to get to sort of the bigger agency model? Like, looking back at yourself maybe four or five years ago, would you be able to tell yourself, you know, buckle down and get ready for this ride? And if so, what is that in the agency world that maybe people just don't realize?
There's a few things in there. I mean, I definitely did not expect when I started the company that I'd be sitting here talking to you this many years later at the scale that we're at now. I think most businesses that are doing so organically, I think it's probably a bit of an exaggeration for anybody to say that they exactly plan their growth. I think you strike out at finding your place in the market, finding your customer base, finding your strategy. And I think most companies, the truth is, sometimes they touch the right nerve, sometimes they hit the right approach, the right strategy, the right customer base, the right lead sources, and are, you know, through a combination of hard work, but also luck and timing and positioning, are fortunate to ride a very successful wave. I think it is important for people to remember. I think it's easy to look at 10Up and probably disingenuous to look at me and 10Up and say, like, this guy, Jake, fell out of the sky on February 11th, 2011, and suddenly built this company overnight. The truth is, I'd been working in agency consulting services, doing agency services for the better part of 10 years before I started 10Up. The prior 3 years also, you know, working in CMSs that were open source, like WordPress and Drupal, and, you know, networking with and building relationships with people in our space. So the truth is, February 2011 was the time that I started 10Up. But the truth is, I had been building a network, building relationships, been doing consulting as a solo freelancer, or sometimes outside of work, as part of small businesses, for a long time. So I started 10Up with a lot of rocket fuel under me, a lot of relationships, a lot of contacts, a lot of insight into how to attack this kind of business, which is maybe my way of saying, like, it took me 10 plus years to get to the point where I was ready to build 10Up and was able to help this thing take off. And that, you know, I guess if I want to be inspiring here, if you stay at it, if you continue to build those relationships, if you continue to build those networks, if you continue to think about where you can differentiate yourself in the market, it can happen to you too.
you know, it's, you fell out of the sky. You just happen to hit all the branches on the way down, right? Just sort of right. going through all the pain points. Yes. People think it is just like this graceful landing.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I'm just looking at the blog post over on 10up.com. Happy sixth birthday. And one of the first bullet points here is from the last company anniversary. We saw four clients projects nominated for the Webby Best Internet Awards, one client taking home the gold, and three winning the People's Choice Award. I mean, just putting that into context, so many people think that, well, they see that and they go, well, I'll just find the clients that will win the Webby Awards, or they will have the projects that will actually put me in place of that. That's not a, you know, and I'm saying this sort of tongue in cheek, like that's not a strategy some people should go with. But I know that it exists. But people say, well, I'll go after the clients that they go after. And maybe that'll help me achieve this sort of air quotes success in my agency. I mean, this wasn't a strategy. This just happened to be something that you came across. Are there any sort of threads that you can pull and say, here's how you find these types of good clients? Or is there a formula to crafting a better portfolio over the years?
That's a good question. I will say a bit equally glibly, I was surprised as anybody else when we saw those award nominations. I mean that obviously a little bit glib. Obviously, I'm really proud of the work we did on those sites, but we didn't go after those projects saying, oh, goody, the Webbies, which all of, you know, maybe a few hundred people who make websites care about, you know, is the strategy here. And that's why we want to win this project. You know, I think, you know, it's a good question. I think that, you know, my strategy, I want to say, is one that's very, you know, the word organic comes to mind again, is very authentic, in the sense that I really believe, maybe to the point of naivete, of if you really put yourself into doing good work, to doing your best work, to being thoughtful, frankly, to not trying to take shortcuts, you'll get to that place. I've always been, which I've encountered throughout my career, I've always been dubious of people that thought there was a shortcut to that kind of recognition or that kind of success, some way to just fast forward and have some secret sauce to just, you know, jump all the way ahead to those kind of awards or those kind of accolades. Where I really think, like when we talk about that falling and hitting all the branches on the way down, my sort of 10-year trajectory before starting 10up, which then in and of itself probably took a few years to get to that place and get to that position, it came from just really trying to do good work, genuinely trying to help people, knowing that it's a slow burn to those kind of relationships and those kind of deals. And I don't really think there's some magic shortcut other than genuinely showing up every day and be willing to doing your best work. The way back to, you know, my first projects, I could laugh in retrospect at what I sold, you know, my first consulting project budgets for and the types of customers I was working with, you know, at the time. But you start somewhere, right? And some of the first projects I did on the web were pro bono and you know, were not interesting at all. And not just because web trends were ugly 10 years ago, but just because genuinely looking back and feeling like that's almost, you know, I'd probably be embarrassed to show anybody that work. But what it speaks to is you over time make that investment, you build those skills, you build those relationships. And maybe I'm just being repetitive, but trying to think that there's like some shortcut that I'm keeping to myself where I knew the person to call and now let me skip all the way to winning a, you know, making a Webby award winning site is just not how it went.
Right, right. You know, it's just look, one of my last guests was Mason James of Valet. And we had a great conversation talking about sort of how maybe his business is shifting with the market where, you know, maybe he's not all in on WordPress anymore. If somebody comes to him with a well-built Drupal site, you know, he might, you know, with all the stars aligning, he might, you know, take that under their portfolio and support that customer. He also might start branching out and doing more creative work, not just for the web, but maybe in some kind of marketing branding fashion. I'm looking at how fast an agency like VaynerMedia, which is run by Gary Vaynerchuk. If people don't know him, he's sort of like this really loud talking head. you could maybe take him in small doses every now and again. To listen to him every day might be a little bit of an overload. But I'm just looking at sort of how fast his business is scaling, and it's all sort of like this. Well, at least from the outside, this sort of content marketing, branding, creativeness. I don't hear much tech stuff going on there. From where you're sitting, which is a lot higher than a lot of us in the agency world, in the WordPress agency world. What does the market look like for you? Are you starting to sort of evolve 10UP to something that's more than just sort of WordPress development? Is it already there and we're just not sort of digesting it that way? In the parallels of like these large 1,000-person agencies like a VaynerMedia, what does that look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think there's a lot to unpack in there. So one thing about 10UP, which has been true for several years, even before this year, we did a little bit of a refresh on our brand and our messaging, is we don't, unless it happens to be like in a recent blog post, we don't say WordPress on our front page. We don't like, we cringe even a little bit when we hear people say it's a WordPress company. We like it. There's benefits to it, right? We like the notion that, you know, we're thought of as a leader in a particular niche and space as opposed to just being in a huge pool. But the truth is we think of ourselves as a company that's focused on designing, implementing, building content, solutions on the web that require some element of content management or content creation. And we think WordPress is our tool of choice, and we're very invested in it and our tool of choice. It's a little bit, I sort of analogize it to like if you want to hire, a construction company and you call them like a craftsman shop, right? Like the tool, the thing that they use to do their job shouldn't be the primary way that they're identified. Right. Shouldn't be the primary way that their craft is thought of, even if they really do invest in a preferred tool. So I would say 10UP strives to be known as something larger than sort of big fish in a small pond of, quote, WordPress companies. We think of ourselves as larger than that. We do lots of front-end work, design work, UX work, ad strategy work, general web strategy work that has nothing, that is essentially agnostic to the platform. At the same time, and so I think that is part of our strategy. I think that should be part of any growing company strategy for a few reasons. One reason is, knock on wood, I hope WordPress lasts for decades as a leading position, but the truth is platforms change, right? I would doubt if in 50 or 60 years, if there is a WordPress that it looks anything like it looks like today, as a major market force. So it's a little bit of sort of thinking forward about what are the things that are more durable. General design, strategy, consulting, web technologies is more durable than a specific platform. And it's also because, and I think it speaks to why somebody, a business like Gary's, can grow so fast. The other challenge there is, I'm trying to think how to say this, but at some level being known for a technical craft, like implementation of a specific platform, can become a zero-sum game in the sense that you want to prove that you can leap over a hurdle of do it very well in ways that are secure, reliable, scalable. That's ultimately a threshold question, right? It's ultimately a logic question for people evaluating you, looking at your price point, asking themselves, are they good enough? Do I have enough confidence in their ability to do these technical things, to work with this tool in a way that are reliable? Things like strategy, business development, branding, design are much more emotional. There's much more of a spectrum of, art can cost $1, art can cost $1 million, right? Or $10 million. And I think when you have a strategy that builds an emotional connection to a prospect or a client, rather than a sort of fairly binary, can you do this one tool thing well, you have there's a lot more potential. And growth and upside. You can show somebody a design that's agnostic to a CMS and have them say, my God, whatever the price, I want that. That's what's right for my business. That's what's going to grow my business. At some point, it's hard to do that if you're just really good implementers of a specific piece of software. I feel like I'm getting into rambling territory. But,
well, no, but you actually, that's a perfect point to just come back with another question, where that is, at what point did you learn it? At what point can somebody be self-aware to understand that they're speaking the wrong language? Is it simply that their business isn't growing or clients are saying no? At like what point can somebody say, you know what, I'm done talking the tech geek stuff like the WordPress and the REST API and all this stuff, and I am going to position, my solution and my relationship with a customer as the most important piece to all of this? I mean, is there a turning point for somebody? Was there a turning point for you that you can pull from where you said, you know what, that's how I'm going to do this. That's the lesson that I've learned.
So I think I'll stick with maybe the the easier or the lazier question, which is what should everybody else except me do? And when did I learn it? So I think, I do think you're right that at the end of the day, somebody can be forced to make that change by realizing that their business is not succeeding, that they're not making what they need to make. And then I think that triggers what can be very difficult soul searching for some people, or hopefully they'll listen to a podcast like yours and have some good epiphanies and realize how they need to change. It can come from a coach or a mentor. I think there's a lot of places where that can come from. I don't know. It's hard to generalize, right? Some entrepreneurs, sure. And that's not my style. For some entrepreneurs, they're very much into like the coaching and the thought groups, and they need to hear it from somebody else. They need a coach to come in and tell them, you need to change what you're doing and here's how. They sort of want that. They secretly want that. You know, entrepreneurs have secretly want that boss to tell them what the magic sauce is and what the secret is. For others, it come, you know, probably more my style. It's more introspection and reading and thinking hard about your strategy and how you change the market. I guess I'm not sure that I have a very clear, crisp answer for what does it take somebody else to make that change. Some people, it's sure. also not in them. Some people can yeah. be happy their entire lives, just, you know, having an ebb and flow for them individually of revenue based on just being a great engineer.
Yeah.
More than one way to skin the cat, right?
Yeah, absolutely. What about internally for the team? How does it look? And maybe you don't have an answer for this one, but how does it look for you and sort of your management team and your team leaders to sort of stay all stay accountable to one another, and not in like a, you know, are you punching the clock kind of accountability, but, you know, hey, you've had these aspirations for, you know, maybe launching a new product within 10UP, or maybe you had a salesperson had an aspiration to go after a big client that maybe you didn't think they were really going to get right out of the gate. But how do you keep that encouragement or that accountability sort of all flowing nicely within the team, or at least at the upper scales of the team?
Sure. So I think it's a great question, and it's not a black and white question. I think that we have both systems that we use to, I think, give people that accountability and give people that autonomy. We also, I think, are not shy about having hard conversations, having vigorous conversations when we think somebody's off base. A lot of it just comes from being as a owner, as a boss, just being very transparent with people and not being afraid to sit down and have a hard conversation with an agenda that says, here are ways in which I think we're struggling. And I think we need to evaluate whether this is continuing to work, or it's continuing, you know, how we get back on track, or whether we're too far away to get back on track. I think some people, maybe I'm going off on a bit of a tangent, but I think in many companies and many businesses, leadership or not leadership, people can confuse hard conversations with aggressive or confrontational conversations, which causes a lot of avoidance of hard conversation. There is a sort of like art as one matures in their position as a leader within a business or in any role, where you have to learn how to have an uncomfortable or a hard or a difficult conversation without it feeling personal and without it feeling confrontational. So I think that's part of it. At 10UP very specifically, we have for every director, every leader in the company, we have every six months, so first half of the year, second half of the year, targets for goals that they want to achieve, metrics and benchmarks that measure their success. We call them, you know, MBOs, management business objectives, and compensation is very tied to those management business objectives. So we have a reasonable and I think very fair set of base salaries, but a lot of like the full compensation package comes from achievement of specific management business objectives, all of which are tied to overall company profitability. So first of all, everybody has an incentive as well as flexibility. So we're not stuck with an unhealthy set of compensation packages in a downturn. Everybody at that leadership level is heavily, first and foremost, incented to make the company as profitable as possible. And then they have a very specific set of objectives underneath that, which speaks to how much of a share of that success they earn, which are very targeted at things like, over the next 6 months, I'm going to achieve things like roll out the first version of this product or achieve these revenue goals or customer growth goals for a product, you know, or for some people that are a little bit, it's a bit of a crass way of saying it, but are a little maybe lower on the totem pole of leadership, things that are very specific about things like employee engagement, customer satisfaction scores, effective rate targets. So I guess my short version of that answer is setting very specific goals that you measure and compensate against on a relatively short term, and being comfortable having regular, challenging, difficult, but respectful and not personal conversations about how we're achieving those goals.
We're talking to Jake Goldman of TenUp.com, most well known actually for his blog, jakegoldman.me.
Because you have to bring up the blog.
And if I check it out right now, the last post is nearly 2.5 years ago, August 14th, 2014. And we are dissecting the agency life, starting an agency, growing an agency, and maybe even using these, distilling some of these lessons down to some freelancer lessons for those of you in the audience. Jake's team has recently launched a new product as well, and we're going to dive into that right now. So, Jake, first, let's preface it with ElasticPress, elasticpress.io. Why this? How did you get here? And how is it going?
All the simple questions.
All the simple questions. Why not a page builder, Jake? Why not a page builder? Why not a contact form?
Because the Beaver Builder people live in my hometown right now.
Oh,
and they know where I live and would find me if I released a page builder, and I don't want to mess with those guys. The answer to why is, I think every product, whether it's an open source tool or whether it's something we ultimately decide to charge for and provide a paid service for, every tool at TenUp starts as a need that a client had. We are not a product company in the sense that we scan the market for like a total gap that we are not already feeling or seeing in our customers and then build the solution on that basis. We see challenges that our customers are facing. We see gaps in the market, gaps in solutions, are determined to provide an answer to our customer. And sometimes we step back and say, you know what? This should be available to more than just our customers. This is more than a one-off kind of a thing we can provide. So a good, highly performant search and querying experience, which I know is a bit of a mouthful, but I can elaborate on. It has been, I think, a pain point, a particular pain point for a certain profile of customer using WordPress, a certain profile of customer in the enterprise or with very high-end requirements around search or filtering for a long time. Fact is, WordPress is built on MySQL, which is, of course, an open source, more traditional, a relational database engine. If you follow the growth in platforms like Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and any sort of social network or platform or high-volume tool, search platforms, you'll know that traditional relational databases don't scale. They just don't perform well when you get up to that level of sophistication and that level of users. So there's been an emergence of a technology, sort of NoSQL technologies, of which Elasticsearch, which is a open source NoSQL indexing tool, is one. So Elasticsearch has been popular for a number of years. There are other extensions. There have been other extensions that plug into Elasticsearch for a long time. We came in first with a plugin because we felt the plugins that were out there that connected to appliances like Elasticsearch were lacking. So we built a plugin over time that made it really easy for a WordPress developer to talk to, without learning a whole new querying language, to be able to talk to a platform that scales better for search, that scales better for complex querying like Elasticsearch. What we found as we built that plugin was a few things, one of which was to really make this work well and work smoothly for many of our customers' expectations, we really needed to manage both ends, both the integration in WordPress, the plugin, but also the setup and hosting of the environment, in the same way that companies like Pagely and WP Engine and Automatic and Pantheon and on have set up very customized WordPress hosting, because they know it's not... getting WordPress to run very well is not as simple as finding a generic, Apache, PHP, MySQL host and just setting up the software out of the box. Same deal with Elasticsearch. So to try to maybe shorten the answer, So we wanted to provide a hosted experience. We set up a hosted version of Elasticsearch that we configured, that we make sure worked harmoniously and seamlessly with our plugin, that took care of managing upgrades to both the plugin and the Elasticsearch, started, rather than billing our customers hourly for managing that hosting, managing that Elasticsearch setup, made it easier for them and frankly cheaper for them by turning it into a product model where we were charging our customers a monthly fee to handle all of the management for them, where they don't have to worry about variable pricing, they don't have to worry about an hourly services invoice, there are economies of scale benefits to multiple customers using the same platform. And then decided, like, this is working very well for our customers, we see a bit of a gap in the broader ecosystem, let's open this up, even if we don't get more than a handful of high-end customers, let's open this up for others to get in.
And by the way, maybe
make it a little bit easier to explain to our customers in terms of having a website and a sort of online marketing brochure about it.
Sure. And I want to dive into that and the positioning and who the right client is for the product. But going back into looking at one of my blog posts or episodes that I put out with you for, again, almost 2.5-3 years ago, we looked at back then a product called SEO Slides, a product called Push Up that you were producing at the time. How are those products today? What lessons have you learned from launching those products and maybe some other products that I've just missed on the radar since then?
Yeah, so those are the only two, if we're talking about like paid products,
yep,
those are the only two that Hennep has released in the past. Push Up continues today. We have, I would say, a modest amount of revenue, sort of barely covers its costs. Month over month, slow trickle of customers at this point, but some high-end 10-up customers that rely on it and really like using it, and sort of the bread and butter of the product. I would say there was a couple things that have happened that sort of shifted the way we thought about PushUp, one of which was we were really, I think in part optimistic about sort of how that technology would proliferate to and standardize across other browsers, particularly on iOS and mobile. That never happened. And so I think the sort of real long-term market upside we saw, we've had to reevaluate. I think the other thing that, the other thing we took away, I think, from PushUp is 10-up can maybe sort of scrape by, break even with this model, but we're really a company that understands the more premium end of support, more premium end of buyer, more premium experience through our agency services, in trying to provide a very, a product that can serve the enterprise, but is also targeted at consumers and people that are spending a one-time fee of $15 and don't have much audience, or people that are spending maybe $10 or $15 a month, is a little bit, in terms of long-term trajectory investment, is a little bit at odds with the way 10Up likes to think about support and service, and I think where we fit best in the marketplace. I guess I wouldn't call it a failure in the sense that we're breaking even. We continue to sort of support the product and welcome some new customers, but I also would be very candid that it's hardly an example of a smashing success for 10Up. I think as a result of both, shifts in where the sort of push notifications ecosystem went, as well as a realization that providing some customers a $15 one-time service or a $5 or $10 or $20 a month service isn't a great fit for how we think of our place in the market.
Let me just unpack the risk factor in creating products like this, especially those that sort of rely on these upward trends that we're just, at the end of the day, we're just, throwing a dart against, for the most part, just throwing a dart against the board and hoping we're hitting bullseye with the trend of maybe push notifications across browsers and stuff like that. I know for myself, for my own product Conductor, launching it 2.5 years ago, I was all in on the WordPress customizer, right? And I was like, this is, the WordPress customizer is going to be here tomorrow. It's going to be amazing. People are going to be building their websites through WordPress's native customizer. And not until, this month or the last 60 days have we finally seen sketches of maybe the customizer in a more traditional page builder context. So I certainly know about these moving targets of hoping for an upswing in the market. But I mean, is there a better science to it now? I mean, with ElasticPress, did you gauge this slightly differently, or is it just an altogether a different market? You're not really worried about an upswing of, ElasticPress usage, I guess, maybe for lack of a better word.
I think the difference for ElasticPress is There's a few differences. One is the ElasticPress plugin that we've built. We are absolutely committed to see a use for our customers, for the market, in ways that we want to contribute, regardless of whether ElasticPress.io hosting exists forever or not. Right? So we're very committed to this plugin, to this open source module, irrespective of the hosting side of the equation. So acknowledging that as having a business case outside of the hosting, I think, is part of it. I think another part of it is, for the price point that we're charging, we're very comfortable with the idea that this does not have to have a lot of customers to be successful. We're very comfortable with the idea that anywhere from a dozen to, if we get hundreds of customers, to if in some, I think, you know, unlikely scenario, we had thousands and thousands of customers, that we can see a model for this plug, for this platform, this hosted service to work. We feel like with the commitment that we're making to the open source plugin, if we have a handful of people paying $2.99 or, you know, or $9.99 a month, we can give them the kind of experience that they want without having to worry about a economies of scale problem in the way that we would have to with PushUp, where one customer paying $5 a month doesn't cover it, right? Get the job done.
Right. Is there a difference? Are you going to engage with a different sort of maybe marketing strategy, or maybe an outbound sales strategy for this type of product being a more premium price point?
Yeah, I think the way to think about it, and I think we're still in the sort of early stages of figuring out exactly what we, you know, how ambitiously we want to publicly, you know, have marketing campaigns. We're investing a little bit in sort of the traditional sort of like, you know, buying some ads for targeted keywords, seeing if we can generate some interests for sort of low-hanging fruit, just sort of early experiments to see whether that pays dividends or not. Ultimately, I think the way to think about ElasticPress.io in its early stages is, with the customers we have today, with the many future 10UP customers, some of whom we're talking to today, who will value this service, see it as a valuable add-on that we provide for our consulting and our agency services, we would be, you know, I feel like I'm maybe setting a too low of a bar here, but frankly, we would be okay and happy with the success of this product. The product would be viable for us. The product would continue to be a modest moneymaker for us. We could continue to support its incremental development just with a strategy of 10UP customers, you know, 10UP customers that are adapting this product for the long term. And there's a little bit of like, and if we can find an audience in a market of people that will discover 10UP or discover ElasticPress independently of us and who see a good use for this service, icing, maybe underselling it a little bit, but to overstate for effect, you could think of it as icing. There's a little bit of like a, we know this product works for our customers. That's where it came from. Its origin is it serves a need for many of our customers. We have many customers paying for it. We have future customers who, you know, and customers we're talking to now who see that we have this offering, this solution as a big value add, a big differentiator for 10UP. We're happy with that. And we want to open it up because we do think that there are other customers who may see value in it, may find us, may discover it of their own accord with a little bit of light marketing. That would be great, but it's not essential for its survival and viability.
A few years ago, we chatted at PrestigeConf, and we sort of just had a, you know, sort of in passing discussion about, you know, the product space in general, in terms of back then, two and a half years ago, maybe three, about WordPress products and them being sort of a viable business, right? Can we really build a big business with WordPress products? And again, like fast forward 3 years to today, you know, iThemes is obviously still here and rocking and rolling. StudioPress, or I should say Copyblogger Media with Rainmaker and their new StudioPress sites and themes and stuff like that, of course, rocking and rolling. Envato is a massive marketplace, obviously doing real well. And there's maybe a handful of others in there that I'm forgetting. But, I mean, are you still looking at, or I guess I should say, are you still not bullish on WordPress products? I mean, do you still think that something else has to happen to make really big business for a WordPress product?
I would say that I remain, and I want to calibrate this a little bit. So let me start with the simple, I'll start this time with a simple one and then elaborate a little bit. I remain bearish on WordPress plugins and themes. as a vehicle for a building a larger business.
Got it.
To be clear, I think you can build some nice lifestyle small businesses built on a beautiful set of themes, built on really well-crafted plugins and modules. And it's clear people are doing that. Like, I have absolutely no doubt if you come in with a good marketing partnership plan, the right quality and differentiation in the market, that you can come in and start a business and do reasonably well for yourself with a plugin or a set of themes. I don't see any of those businesses becoming, you know, large 50 plus 100 plus person companies.
Got it.
Maybe I lack imagination. Maybe somebody will prove me wrong, but I don't really see that. I think the argument would be,
sorry to cut you off, would be something like, yeah, an Instagram where there was maybe, what, 10, 11, 12 people working on. I mean, again, I understand not the same context, but in terms of team size versus what the company sold for, I almost said revenue because I don't think they were making any money. Right, but I think there were like 12 people, $1 billion or something like that. I mean, I guess could somebody make a unicorn in the WordPress space with a small team, or not measure big business by surely just the amount of people that they have hired?
Right. So I guess when I'm talking about sort of like size of business, you're right. There's a little bit of a conflation there between sort of revenue and margin and team size. Although I don't, you know, even if you look at like Facebook, even Automattic these days, I don't know many companies that earn that much revenue and ultimately stay 15 people. I think looking at the Instagram, it wasn't really revenue, right? It was a acquisition opportunity. Even that was sort of, you know, to this day, sort of, I think we kind of laugh at it, right? It's sort of an extreme example. Yeah. I don't think there's a $1 billion WordPress plugin waiting to be invented.
Yeah, me either.
I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see that. Now, I do think I do think there are opportunities in the WordPress space to build. Maybe I don't even want to restart that sentence, but I do think there are service opportunities or hosted service platform opportunities that intersect with the WordPress space that can become large businesses. I think frankly, as most of the industry does, right, outside of WordPress and technology at large and the industry at large, I think the industry sees the money in software as a service, right? There's a reason Microsoft and Adobe and everybody in the world is switching to a recurring hosted services model. Even Apple's largest revenue growth area is their ongoing hosted services, not their standalone software products, which they mostly give away for free now. Obviously their hardware is the lion's share of their revenue, but it's not the growing one. So I do think something like a hosted end-to-end service like ElasticPress, I do think there are even spaces for some of the hosts in the WordPress business to get larger and, and add more volume. I think there are lots of opportunities for recurring revenue models that provide a consistent back-end service that extends what WordPress does, with some integrations to build large businesses and build very successful businesses. And I think there is also a space, again, for small to medium businesses to have success with plugins and themes. I just don't think there's a rocket ship there.
One of the things you mentioned, or one of the statements you had earlier, was we might not know WordPress as we know it 10 years from now. I've been hearing that on repeat with a lot of sort of thought leaders in our space talking about WordPress. So, and you've just brought up again one of my secret little things that I like to sort of follow and just really break down as I see things shift, which is WordPress hosts. So, how will WordPress change over the years? Like, what is it inside of you that thinks WordPress will be different 5, 8, 10 years from now? And where is that going to come from? Is that going to come from our REST API and the technologies that we're building into WordPress? Or is it going to come from innovation at hosting companies and these sort of flavors of WordPress as they roll out their own experiences of WordPress? How will WordPress look different, or how will WordPress look differently 5 to 10 years from now? What will be the driving force behind that?
Yeah, I'm not the best prognosticator of 5 to 10 years. I'm the guy that didn't think TenUp would be a 100-person company in 5 years. So I'm always a little bit cautious on the prognostication. I think that I do think it's almost like it's a cliche thing to say at this point, and it's a trendy thing to say, but I do continue to think, as I have thought for years, that WordPress is going back to, I think, the last post I have on my blog, the last long post I have on my blog from 3 years ago. I do continue to think that WordPress's trajectory continues to be leaning into a content creation and storage engine for the web. And I do increasingly think that things like front ends, how you access and display that content, particularly on the consumer facing side, not necessarily the publisher facing side, will have to continue to evolve over time to keep pace with how that industry is changing, which things like the REST API are obviously critical components of. I think Matt Mullenweg has the exact right set of priorities for the next version of WordPress, which may be out a year from now, I guess, which may be, you know, or maybe it will take, you know, be a little bit goofy here. Maybe it'll take that 5 years, right? So that's where it'll be in 5 years. But I think if you look at what he's projecting as the future of WordPress, I know I think feel very validated in terms of where I think the platform is going, in the sense that he's prioritizing REST API, which is to say the way a primary use case for WordPress is going to involve how you get content in and out, but don't necessarily render it in WordPress. Right, so it's the storage and the management of the content, the REST API, and then a lot of emphasis on the experience of publishing and creating content, which is the sort of like it's a platform for creating content, is a platform for going in and writing a story. The truth, I think the truth is the reason people pick WordPress, the reason companies and businesses pick WordPress, is because it has a lot of mindshare. It has a lot of familiarity for, as far as products that are highly extensible and open, how to create and publish a story.
Right.
There are other platforms out there that obviously have much more modern end-to-end slick experiences, but they inevitably run into problems of, they inevitably run into a bunch of different problems, including things like, which I know you've talked about and I've talked about, ownership of content and control of the content and where it goes, and degree of flexibility and customization. If you want to build that, you know, a not generic site and want a developer to come in and make it look like something completely different, I still think WordPress is the tool that offers the best authoring publishing experience with any sort of ecosystem around it that makes it a viable, you know, option in terms of costs and developer community and developer ecosystem.
And how do you think, or who do you think is going to, I know it's sort of a weird question, and the obvious is, well, it's going to be the WordPress open source community, and it's going to be automatic. But I'm really curious to watch how hosting companies shape WordPress, the brand of WordPress, the experience of WordPress over the next, let's say, 5 years, only because they have so many eyeballs on their hosting platform. They have so many customers. And a lot of them are sort of crafting this new onboarding experience. They're sort of integrating their own hosted plugins, their own sort of air quotes marketplace of plugins, suite of plugins, which is really shaping the experience of a real consumer like Joe the blogger or Anne the blogger on what WordPress means to them. I guess all of that is to say is I've just got a curious, watchful eye, not in a bad way, but just a curious, watchful eye on how hosting companies are sort of shaping the experience of WordPress for the end user. I mean, do you see any of that from where you're flying or in the context of the dealings that you do with enterprise space? Any thoughts on how hosting companies might shape this experience of WordPress?
It's a good question. So it's not really a new concept, right? If you publish on WordPress.com or if you use like their VIP service, there are differences.
Right.
Not huge ones, but well, actually in the case of just WordPress.com, there are some pretty huge differences. You can have almost a completely different publishing experience inside of there. Customers that use like the VIP service have always had a series of modules that many of them have moved over to Jetpack, but a series of modules and add-ons that differentiated it from standard hosting. I guess I will say I am equally having a watchful eye on it. There are places where I think that innovation is extremely useful, which are more of back-end integrations that are sort of seamlessly fold into the WordPress experience a little bit more behind the scenes. So for example, you know, having using Elasticsearch or Solr instead of native WordPress search under the hood for your search results is great. That all that does is fix a pain point in WordPress that you can't have in the open source package and sort of obfuscate away solving something that's complex inside of it. I'm much more leery about things like building in a page builder or default forms plugin because I worry that it fragments the experience and the understanding of what WordPress is. You know, in the same sense that like platforms, in the same sense that you have like Google creating pixels and stuff now, because it's like, what do consumers know what the Android experience is?
Right.
Right. When they move from phone to phone, are they startled that quote unquote Android is something completely different?
Phone analogy, something I usually, I'd sort of lean to is, you know, iOS is smooth, it's buttery, you know, for the most part, don't have any problems with it, but that's because it's a closed, you know, it's just a closed environment. It's all controlled by Apple. They get to set the tone, whereas at least for the last 10 years, Android has been, or maybe not that long, but whatever it's been, Android has been this open platform where Samsung can do whatever they want, LG can do whatever they want, and a very fragmented experience. Which, yeah, you know, it's this thing where it's sort of what WordPress feels like right now, right? So if we can't smooth that out, you know, there's going to be a whole branding and adoption issue, I think, in the long term.
Like as a consultant, to know that there are things like search or caching or even like things like making sure you have injected good metagraph tags, right, or XML sitemaps, things that are like everybody should be doing this on their site, but you can't do it out of the box in an open source package that a host just takes care of, which they have been doing for a long time, I think is great and eases the experience of using WordPress.
Right.
The notion that a customer could come to me one day and thinks that a popular page builder plugin is a native part of the WordPress experience and part and parcel of the thing that they want a consultant to implement, that starts to worry me.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a great point. It's a great point. You know, I recently did a video on the Matt Report YouTube channel talking about this because I've just been spending some time, you know, not only is Beaver Builder a sponsor of next season, but just spending some more time in that ecosystem, like Facebook groups and forums, and just seeing how people are using the software and just getting their mindset, just trying to really understand how people leverage this stuff. People are passionate. People look at these tools as enablers, right, for good. So they see they can do things that they otherwise would just be over their heads, like coding layouts or, you know, whatever. So they're really powerful tools. They really grow their own community within a community, which is just amazing to witness. But there's also some fear, right? A lot of these people are live in fear that they use these tools that make the job easier, you know, from the organic developer, like you should have just coded everything from scratch, right? You know, well, every time I go out, do I build my car every single time I go out to say, oh, you should have just built your car from scratch every time you go to the mall or hailed a horse and buggy, you know, that kind of thing. A lot of people are sort of also living with this fear. This isn't really a question. This is just more of a statement and a thought that comes out of all of this stuff that sometimes the ease of use thing, the ease of use, people look at it in the WordPress world as, ooh, like you should have done it with, you know, COBOL and, you know, built it that way. It's just not fair.
The right analogy isn't like, I don't think it's the car one. The right analogy is something like, to me, the right analogy is something like doing your taxes.
Right.
There is absolutely a place for, which I used for many years before I started the business, for something like TurboTax, which is generic, probably not going to optimize everything around the edges, but gets the job done for somebody that doesn't want to spend a lot on their taxes and makes it more accessible and gets more people into actually getting their taxes done on time. That's fantastic. But there's also a place where as you move up market where it's not the right answer. It's not the economical choice. It's not the best solution. Right. If you need something more custom, if you have more complicated business dealings where there is still a place for somebody doing it bespoke for you, like, and then giving very close customized attention to like a tax accountant, right? Which means that that market, you know, changes over time. I think that where it can become, where I think people like me become nervous is when you have, if I was to go to my accountant today or even 10 up 3 years ago and say, I think I can just do this with TurboTax, I think he would be scared out of his mind for a good reason.
Right.
Right. About what the heck I'm doing. Right. And I think what concerns me is not that there are some people building their first website, throwing up a quick restaurant website that is not, they're not going to spend a lot of money, don't have complex needs, that are looking for a simple off the shelf solution. I think that's fantastic. I think what worries me is when, is if you try to create the illusion that something that has a higher end need, something that does need to be more crafted, something that needs to deal with performance, and all the things that are involved in SEO today and all the things that are involved in creating a really smooth, clean, intuitive experience, where those audiences start to think there's just a front page like thing where I can do this myself, that's where I start to squirm. And I genuinely don't think, because I would be the first to adopt page builders, just like the first guy that, you know, just like I was in the front of the line to adopt WordPress instead of custom coding every page of your site. Right. I'd be the first in line if I thought like page builders were even close to at a point, or the technology was even close to a point where it was right for a higher end customer. I genuinely don't think that it's the right solution for the market today. And we have tried to build, you know, content block management tools, not with the intention of like selling them, for some of our customers trying to figure out like, is there repetition here? Are there places where we can consolidate some of these solutions into one? And there's some overlap, there's some frameworks and tools you can put together, but like a completely off the shelf, here's how customer A, who's different than customer B, is going to build your homepage. I just don't think it works for a customer at a certain high-end expectation.
Well, the good news is Conductor's on GitHub now, Jake, so you can go ahead and download that bad boy and fork it that way. Thanks for letting me have that open plug at the end. This has been an amazing episode with my good friend, Jake Goldman. Jake, where can folks find you on the web to say thanks?
You can find me on Twitter at Jake M. Gold, JakeMGold. 10up.com is your best place to figure out sort of what I'm working on, what's in my headspace, its blog, our portfolio, and also following 10up on Twitter, 10up. If you want to wait another 2.5 years, you can watch my blog.
I actually heard that you blog more on LinkedIn now. Actually, you're putting all your content on LinkedIn. That's where all of your content's going these days. Thanks everybody for listening.
If by content you mean like one word, one sentence posts, sure.
Right, yeah. thanks everybody for listening. It's mattreport.com/subscribe. It's the best way to stay connected. And Matt Report on iTunes. In fact, I've been playing with some SEO stuff. If you just search for WordPress podcast, I come up, and go ahead. And if you enjoyed episodes like this, leave a 5-star review. It's greatly appreciated.